Someone told you knee pain is just getting older? They were wrong. The Joint Relief Institute offers fast joint pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
All right, Tim Gordon, Steve Bertrand here. Thanks very much and welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Monday afternoon. It's a Monday. That means that the boys from Chicago Inno are in the studio. A little bit later, we're going to talk about the top Major League Baseball players when it comes to social media. But right now, we say hello to Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno. Hello, boys. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Steve.
Thanks for having us.
Are you big into the Olympics yet? Have you been watching it all? Just talking off the air, it doesn't sound like you have.
I love the Olympics. Yeah, I'm crazy. But Jim and I were talking about this a couple weeks ago. I don't get why gymnastics aren't a bigger deal. If the UFC just sold for $4 billion, someone needs to figure out how to make that happen with the Olympics. It's immensely watchable.
Yeah, you need gymnastics once every 4 years, right? Like, yeah, I mean, it's such a fascinating sport to watch. How come we're not seeing that every year?
They're marketable stars. Yeah, so make it happen.
Well, this is a good question. Would they be stars if we saw them all the time?
Yeah, I mean, think of the UFC product. It's just like men wrestling on the ground. Gymnastics is so much more exciting, and they're kind of... Yeah, you just have to one another.
UFC, that's the
fighting, the ultimate fighting.
Okay,
yeah,
that appeals
sold for $4 billion.
I know, but that appeals to a different group of people. I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah, it's true. But every time I go into the Olympics, I think, well, I'm not going to really care or watch that much. But then I get hooked every four years. If I knew the athletes maybe a little bit better, I'd be more inclined and know more about them to kind of get more into it.
Well, tell me about reading a story at Chicago Inno about this guy, Josh George, who is not competing yet, but he's in the Paralympics coming up in early September down
there. Next month. And one of the reasons we wanted to cover Josh George is that he's part of the broader Illinois tech community. So Josh George is a Paralympian in the 100 and 400 meter wheelchair race, and he is working, or he's worked at, a UIUC startup called IntelliWheels. And what IntelliWheels does, it basically makes lifestyle products for wheelchairs. Wheelchairs can be seen as a medical device, whereas IntelliWheels makes, you know, hand grips. They make kind of like a Nike ID platform for wheelchairs, which allows users to basically customize and custom make their own. So kind of bringing a more personal human element. And what's really neat about reading up about IntelliWheels is that it shines a light on what UIUC in its history involved with innovation in disability sports.
Well, I gotta say, when I was a young kid, I don't think they do it now, but they would do the up close and personals with the athletes, right? Let's go up close and personal. So many things here I didn't realize, and that is that University of Illinois has, it's the top, right?
Yeah,
sports
In the country, they created the first collegiate wheelchair basketball team in 1948, and then a lot of the research that this university has done on accessibility and campus actually laid the groundwork to the Americans with Disabilities Act. So UIUC, because of a number of reasons, you know, it just had the right researchers. Josh George even said that it could be because of like the long straight country roads down in Champaign.
Right.
But all of these kind of ingredients came together to make UIUC this real hub for disability innovation.
Well, good for them, because, you know, they certainly have taken their lumps after the past 5 or 10 years. So that's a nice one. And there's another thing in this story, as we're up close and personal. He talks about how he lost the use of his legs. He was 4 years old and fell out of his apartment window, right? I think it was 12 floors up or 4 floors up, something like
that. Yeah, landed directly on his legs, and he had a really great anecdote where he said, you know, your ability to recover is based entirely on your parents.
I love that.
And he said his parents, you know, this was just another thing.
And what a comeback story, and an athlete to definitely watch next month when we see the Paralympics. And he is actually a favorite, I think, in the 400 and the 800-meter relay. So really, really interesting stuff.
Well, read it. It's at Chicago Inno, and it's one of those stories that I just love, because the point there was his parents said, okay, this is you now. And
here's a challenge. Let's tackle it.
And here's what we're going to do. And they did. Okay, let's stick with sports and talk about one of the sillier things I've ever read.
We're so happy to bring you those kind of silly stories, by the way.
Wilson, I don't want to disparage them. I'm sure they worked very hard on this. Wilson Sporting Goods unveiled a new smart football that tells you how your spiral is, right? Or how your velocity is, or your accuracy.
Yes, the Internet of Things has finally come to your backyard.
Isn't that football. What your buddy does? Like, you suck, man.
Yeah.
That's what, right? That's
yeah,
throw a tighter spiral. Right? Yeah. Come on, that's terrible.
So today, Wilson unveiled the Wilson X Connected Football, and it is a smart football. It gives you, it connects with your app, and it gives you a lot of information about your throwing. So it gives you the velocity. It gives you the distance. It gives you the spin rotation, so it tells you how tight your spiral is. It'll tell you if the ball was caught or not. So it's a $200 football just unveiled today. They're shipping it out later next month.
Now, if I were to throw a ball right now to Will, I would know whether he caught it.
But now you have a mobile alert that tells you whether I do or not.
So it is silly, but if you have a personal coach you're working
yeah,
with, you can
no,
get all
I
the data
right.
on catches versus missed catches versus speed. So really you can kind of see your progress improved right in the app.
No, right. I'm making fun of it, but I'm sure that's true. If you need to improve your spiral, you can measure it this way in velocity.
Yeah, a lot of these advancements in sports equipment, we've covered a startup that attaches a device to your golf swing that allows you to measure kind of the trajectory and the speed. And all of these things really aren't for the casual fan. It's if you want to improve a little bit every day. So, yeah, I'm not going to buy a smart football. But if I was really reliant on being a professional quarterback, collecting that data and using it to get better, you know, sure, why not? I can't see the backyard kid wanting this, but
okay,
you know.
So it was just too easy. I take it back. I take back all my criticism.
Yeah.
Unlike the Wilson Smart Basketball, which tells you,
yes, last year Wilson unveiled the smart basketball, same sort of concept. It does makes and misses. So
it does what?
Makes and misses.
So it tells you if you made it.
Correct.
Or
missed
if
it.
You missed it. Right. Okay, we'll talk about that on another program. 18 minutes after 12. It's 12:22. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand. Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke are here from Chicago Inno. All right, Wilson's a local company. Now I'm feeling kind of guilty for dealing on their innovation.
Sure, get some nasty
yeah,
emails
but we were talking about it off with the smart basketball. Like, if I'm going to go shoot for 2 hours, I don't want to be counting. So it's kind of a not a bad idea to just, you know, shoot for 2 hours and then look
see
up
what your
how
percentage
you did.
Is it yeah. right?
A $200 football and basketball is not for everyone, but, I mean, you're exactly right. That
if you want to get better,
really
that matters. Yeah.
Okay. Or maybe we just made up to Wilson. Thank you very much for that. Would they ever be considered? I mean, maybe they're too old of a company to be one of Chicago's coolest companies.
They can be. Thanks for bringing that up, Steve. So it's this competition where we're doing, where we're spotlighting companies in Chicago with the best culture. And, you know, culture usually gets hijacked by startups and fast-growing tech companies.
Like I just did, right?
Exactly, yeah. Because you can put in ping pong tables, you can have, you know, a free kegerator, you bring in lunch. But really, you know, when we talk about looking for the coolest companies, we're looking for any and all reasons you like working for your business. That does not have to be a startup. That does not have to be a really cool tech company. So it could be Wilson. You know, if you love working for your business, if you love their charitable initiative, if you like just the project you're working on, we want to hear about it. So we received hundreds of submissions ranging all over. Yes, we got a ton of unlimited vacation times. We heard about everyone's ping pong table. But really, we just heard funny anecdotes about, you know, companies fostering this environment where colleagues can get along and goof around, and that's what made it cool. So if that's happening at Wilson, they certainly qualify.
Yeah, ping pong tables are nice, but it's how the people treat each other, I think.
Which, yeah, exactly, and that's culture. I think when we talk, you can't force it, you can't buy it in a gift pack. It's if you can have a casual conversation with your colleague about anything at any time, that's reflective of the environment that's been created.
And this is Chicago Fest. I don't know if I quite mentioned that, but you
guys are
right.
Coming so,
up.
Yeah, we're going to name the coolest company winners at Chicago Fest, which is August 17th. You can check out tickets and info on chicagoinno.com. And it's really, like Will said, about company culture and what makes your company cool. And that can be defined in a lot of different ways. Like, a lot of companies define that by giving back, doing some volunteer stuff. Some companies have a company vacation house in Hawaii that they raffle
really?
Off to their employees.
Yeah, company boats. Yeah.
Wow, okay.
And listen, we want to be as cool as these companies, so it's going to be a good time next Wednesday where Jim and I pretend to be really cool.
No, you guys are really cool, especially when you share a studio with me.
All right, tell me about the Center of Lost Arts. It sort of was an experiment last year from the co-founder of Kickstarter, right? And it's now leading to bigger things.
Yeah, Charles Adler, the co-founder of Kickstarter here in Chicago, and he has officially opened the Center for Lost Arts. It is a big facility in Goose Island, and it's really a center for makers. Like Kickstarter was a digital platform for makers, this is kind of that physical version of that. So it's got a 10,000 square foot workspace where it's really a place for anybody to come in and work. 3D printers are there. It's there for woodworking musicians, entrepreneurs, the team behind the Wabash lights, which are putting the neon light display underneath the Wabash L tracks. They're working out of there. So really cool, creative workers kind of all under one roof.
Yeah, and he's defined it as kind of a combination of an art residency, a tech incubator, and a civic space. And he's keeping it pretty raw because he wants the people who move in to start working in there to kind of define what the Center for Lost Arts is going to be. And there is potential here to you know, expand throughout the country, but you kind of need spaces like this when being able to create, when 3D printers and 3D carvers, the equipment that makes making even easier and more affordable than ever before, you kind of need a space for these. So it's kind of nice to have this room on Goose Island where you can go in and start building. It's like basically a pop-up manufacturing.
You guys have each mentioned the 3D printers, which are available, but they're also circular saws and soldering stations, right? So this is, you know, hands-on building things.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's for, you know, it's funny. We just talked about how like tech startups kind of steal the cool company culture term. It's almost like digital startups steal the term entrepreneur. But entrepreneur is obviously like a small business owner, right? Like, and this kind of caters to that group of entrepreneurs, those who really need to build and sell something.
Let's get some sawdust going. Jim Dahlke, Will Flanagan from Chicago Inno. Where do people find more about these stories?
ChicagoInno.com and our daily newsletter, The Beat.
You got to follow that. Thanks, guys. Good to see you again.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Cameron Harold is the founder and the co-founder, or founder, I should say, of COO Alliance, and is also the author of a new book called Meetings Suck. He's got quite a history and a number of things that I want to talk to him about in the time we have. So let's start just by saying hello. Cameron, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. So, Meetings Suck, the name of the book, sort of belies the message, right? There are ways to have positive meetings. I haven't been to one yet, though.
Well, the funny thing is meetings actually don't suck. We just suck at running meetings. And it kind of came to me recently. I've been coaching and mentoring high growth entrepreneurs and CEOs around the world for 9 years, and they all keep complaining about meetings. And I was talking to them about Little League Baseball one day, and I said, you know, we would never send our 9-year-old kid off to play Little League Baseball for the first time without teaching him how to hold a bat and how to swing the bat and how to hold a glove and catch a ball. We would never set them up for that embarrassment. And yet at the same time, we allow our employees to attend meetings or book meetings or participate in meetings without having really had any real training on it. So I tried to pull together the best practices from the best companies on how to run highly effective meetings. And they do actually exist.
It's funny. My wife hosts meetings, and it's whether it's the social organization or something at the office, and she is huge, always on an agenda, no matter how informal the meeting might be or how informal the group might be. And she says it just makes such a difference, and lo and behold, that's one of your key findings as well, right? An agenda is key.
Yeah, and I just tell people, no agenda, no attenda. You know, when someone requests your time to show up at something and they don't tell you the purpose, outcomes, and the agenda, you know, what you're covering in what order and how many minutes on each item, why would you possibly show up to that? So I tried to outline in Meeting Suck exactly how people can set up a very quick agenda that everyone can say yes or no to. And it also allows people to opt out of meetings. And I think we often are over-inviting people, or people are showing up at meetings they don't really need to be at, and their time might be better spent working on other project or initiative instead of just showing up.
Oh, wait a minute. Can you do that? Can you say, hey, thanks for the invite to this meeting, but I've got better things to do?
Well, it's not only do I have better things to do, but, you know, you don't really need me in this. It looks like with the agenda you have, you've got enough people covering it, and I think my time and resources are better spent for the company working on something else. And I think we as leaders need to feel really good about that. It's kind of like the Navy SEALs. You know, they have a very, very specific job to do, and they don't worry about anyone else's job because they know that everybody has everyone's back. And instead of trying to have this big kumbaya group hug where we don't hurt everybody's feelings, maybe we need to say, you know, as companies, we only have three resources, people, time, and money, and how do we best allocate those?
You know, and I think a lot of times people think the idea of having a meeting, a regular get-together, is going to solve the problems. And just the fact that you're together in a room isn't really a solution just by definition.
Correct. You actually have to be there with a stated purpose and driving towards the right outcomes with a good moderator and controlling the idle chatter. And then making sure that, you know, Jeff Bezos from Amazon says, you don't invite any more people to a meeting than can be fed by two pizzas. I mean, you need to have some rule to not over-invite people to the meeting.
There are different personalities at every meeting, right? There's sort of the suck-up person who says, oh, that's a great point. There's kind of the show-off. And then there are the people who just sit on their hands and keep their opinions to themselves. As a guy or a woman who's running a meeting, there must be a skill first in recognizing that. I mean, some of those types are pretty obvious, but in fostering sort of involvement from the people who might not be so eager to talk.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the things that I tried to do with Meeting Suck is I broke the book down into separate sections, and one of the sections talks specifically about how to attend meetings, but another one talks about how do you get the analytical and amiable people to speak up and be heard, and how do you also control the expressives and the dominants, you know, like the salespeople who are always talking and don't really even go anywhere. So I have a really good exercise where you use post-it notes to get everyone to write their ideas down on post-it notes, and then each person in the room, starting with the newest and youngest person and finishing with the most senior or the CEO, they speak their ideas in turn. And by having the most senior executives speak last, they often start seeing that, wow, the team actually has some really good ideas already. Maybe I don't need to be the one speaking up.
We're talking
and
to
getting the,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And by getting the analytical, amiable people to speak, you actually realize they actually have value. And if we don't get them to speak, why are we inviting them to the meeting in the first place?
That's Cameron Harrell. The name of his book is Meeting Suck. He also was the mastermind behind 1-800-GOT-JUNK. I want to ask you something I read in your biography. It says that you, I think the word was fired from the company, but you remain one of their chief spokesmen and top champions. Is that right?
Yeah, it was kind of a mutual leaving. I was there for 7 years as the chief operating officer from 2000 until 2007, and they really needed someone to take the company to the next level. I took them from $2 million to $106 million with no debt, giving up no equity in 6 years. They needed the next person to take them from the $100 million to the billion mark. And literally 2 days after leaving the company, I was doing speaking events on behalf of the company. And still to this day, I speak about 1-800-GOT-JUNK, rave about them in my blogs, talk about them in all my books. And the CEO and I are still very good friends.
I was watching a TED Talk that you gave and getting ready for this interview, which really is what drew my interest the most. And that's what I'd like to focus on toward the end here. What kind of a student were you?
I was a terrible student. I was very distracted, very kind of up and down in the classroom. I was always trying to sell stuff to the other kids. And I really didn't see the point of, you know, studying the Native Indians and the War of 1812. I really wanted to learn about other things, but we weren't allowed to. So I looked at all the shortcuts and tried to find the ways to get through school fast.
Cameron, that makes no sense whatsoever because you went on to become a successful businessman. That can't be.
Yeah, well, I don't think you need to learn from theory. You can also learn from experience. So I was doing a lot of little business ventures, and I cover a lot of them in my TED Talk that's still on TED.com about all these little business ventures that I had as a kid. And that's really where I learned how to grow companies, was by actively doing it.
You said your dad actually groomed you too. And tell me about what you do with allowances at your house.
Yeah, we split them. So the allowances are paid where the child can take part of the money and spend it on what they want, but part of it goes into their house account and they're always saving for the future. So I want them to actually build the habit and the muscle of knowing that they have to save money, not just spend it efficiently. You know, anybody can spend money properly, but what about saving for the future?
I called it an allowance, but it's not really an allowance, right? You make them go out and find work.
Yeah, they can actually make money doing anything they want around the house as long as they notice it first and they come and negotiate the price. But if they wait too long and I say, hey, the garbage has to be taken out, then that's just part of the family's chores.
And
if they come to me and say, hey, Dad, I noticed this needs to be done, then they're spotting an opportunity, which is really entrepreneurship.
Okay, so they come to you and they say, hey, Dad, I noticed that the leaves need to be raked. I'll do it for 15 bucks. And you say, no, 10?
I'll say, no way, I'll give you a buck. And then somehow they end up settling on $3.50. Or their brother chirps in and he wants to do it for $2. And all of a sudden they've learned how to negotiate. They learned how to spot the opportunity. And it teaches them to actually want to make money and want to solve problems versus wait for, you know, stuff to be delegated to them and get the same regular amount. I don't want them to learn how to receive a paycheck. I want them to learn to be entrepreneurial.
All right, let's go back to the classroom then, because there's the kid who's great in science, the kid who's great in math or English or whatever, and then there's just sort of these, you know, misfits in the back of the class who get passed by. And you make the point that those are the people who we should be nurturing in other ways.
Yeah, most of the entrepreneurs who I coach are very, very successful, you know, running $100 million or 10 to $100 million companies. They were almost always the kids who were underperforming in class because they just didn't see the point, or they were quick learners and they got bored and frustrated, and the school system said they didn't fit in. Well, we don't fit in. We're not supposed to fit in. We're supposed to actually be leading organizations. We're not supposed to be like the teachers or the doctors. So a lot of the traits of entrepreneurs, attention deficit disorder, bipolar disorder, even speaking out loud, which is on the spectrum of Tourette's, those are not problems. Those are what make us entrepreneurial.
You know, Cameron, one of the shows I did, and it's been 15 years ago, and it has stuck with me. One night, I had three members of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra on, and each of them told the same story. They were lost in their lives. They were in trouble. They were failing. They were doing all these different terrible things until they found their instrument. And once they found their instrument, now they've become world-class musicians. So for so many kids, it's just a matter of finding the instrument and finding the teachers and mentors who are going to help them find those instruments.
Right. And instead of saying that these kids have problems, maybe we say, wow, this is exactly who they're supposed to be. Let's leverage those opportunities. If the kid thinks out loud and is up and down in a roller coaster and is always selling stuff, why don't we let him sell stuff at the school and let's take a 10% commission off of the stuff he sells and let's charge him rent? Let's create space for entrepreneurial kids instead of saying sit still and pay attention and be like everybody else.
That's Cameron Harrell, the name of his latest book, and there will be more this year, but the latest one is called Meetings Suck. Cameron, it was great to talk to you. I hope we can do so again.
Thanks, Steve. Really appreciate the time.
You bet. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Talking baseball, Klazuski Campanella talking baseball.
Thank you very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It's 1252. Klazuski and the Panella, those are, we need to update that. I don't know. Mandy Antoniacci is with us. She is a sports business advisor, columnist. She wrote something on, I think it was Inc.com, that got my attention. Mandy, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate you having me.
All right, what do you think? Klazuski, Panella, maybe we should throw in Cabrera, C.J. Wilson, things like that. We have to update that song.
I think you're right. I was listening to that and I was thinking the same thing.
The piece I saw at Inc.com had to do with social media, but it starts in general with Commissioner Rob Manfred, you know, trying to reach out, trying to get to these younger people. And that's something that's going to be very important when it comes to the future of Major League Baseball.
It really is. And, you know, a lot of people are talking about baseball being in trouble. And, you know, if you think about it, baseball watchers are older than their counterparts. So the median age of a baseball viewer today is about 53 years old, according to ESPN. When you compare that with NFL, which is 47 years of age, it gets even worse when you look at the NBA, where the median fan age is just 37 years old. What's really more troubling is that, you know, baseball's failing to connect with younger fans,
right,
and bring in that new generation. So it's really a sport, sadly, that's out of sync with today's society of kids. I mean, let's face it, you know, there's no touchdown dance going on in the baseball diamond. So
let me tell you, Mandy, my younger child is going off to college in a couple of weeks. And so, you know, I'm at that stage where I'm the wistful parent thinking of all the things I might have done better. And I'm like, I should have taken him to more baseball games. And then my next thought is he had no desire to go to a baseball game ever. Anytime I took him, I kind of dragged him along. He just never registered. And I think there are a lot of friends of his that feel the same way.
You know, it's true. And there's one aspect of the game, which is that it's deemed a slower game and a slower sport for them to watch as viewers. But then the other troubling stat is that baseball participation in youth leagues,
right,
is the lowest among the four major sports teams. So lower than basketball, lower than football, lower than soccer. And, you know, Commissioner Rob Manfred came out and said there is a direct correlation, as we know, with youth that actually plays the sport and their desire to participate as a spectator. So those two things are really something that needs to change, really increasing the participation levels in youth leagues, as well as looking at ways to speed up the game itself to stay on par with today's society of kids.
And you write about a study that was, I think, done by MVP Index, and it looked at the top 10 major league players when it comes to social media, their followings, their use, such as that. Who was number one on that list? I don't remember now.
Number one is Robinson Cano from the Seattle Mariners. And, you know, one of the things that he does really well is that he not just engages his fans in the game, but he really engages them in a level of participation in some of the things that he's doing off the field through his foundation, RC22. And one thing that I think is really cool is that he actually built a school in the Dominican Republic where he's from, and he took his followers and his fans along from the build all the way through to the opening of the school. So if you follow him on Instagram, if you follow him on Twitter, you can actually view the site and the foundation for the school when it was really nothing more than rubbish all the way through the build, and see the students who are going to be the first students of the school. And he refers to this project as his dream project. Well, so taking fans along that journey is just really an engaging way to connect with them.
Near and dear in Chicago is Anthony Rizzo, who comes in number four on the list. 293,000 Twitter followers, 281,000 following him on Instagram. But in the time we have left, you raised something interesting there. His social content focuses on families of children suffering from pediatric cancer, which is a wonderful cause. Cano's cause is a wonderful cause, but it's not baseball. And it looks to me like what a lot of these people are tweeting about is not actually the game itself.
It's not, you know, and some of the ways, one of the things that they do quite well, and one of the things that, you know, athletes in social media do quite well is expose a side of themselves and a human side of themselves to take fans into their lives off the field, off the court, to give them that human side and look at them. Because, you know, as fans, we see them in their uniform and we see them on the baseball diamond, but we don't understand really the human side to them as a human being versus as a player, and taking them through the, you know, walking them through their foundations and really taking them through the journey. For some, even like you, Darvish, you know, a self-proclaimed foodie, just showing his passion for food and consumption. You know, it takes them off the diamond and really humanizes these players.
That's Mandy Antonacci. I hope we can talk again. Thank you very much. I appreciate it today.
Would love to. Thank you so much, Steve. Appreciate the time.
You bet. We'll stay in contact. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.